Now, I'd like to ask you if you would please to offer a very warm welcome to our next panelist, Luann.
Hey, y'all. My name is Luann. I'm an alcoholic. So, I just need to preface today. It's a total honor to be asked by Bill, wherever he went, to speak about Step 11. But he did so really, like, Thursday, I think. And this step for me was the most transformative step in my recovery. I will get emotional, just letting you know. But when he said that, I rearranged my schedule today to make sure that I was here, because that's how important this step is to me. And so I have Ronald McDonald makeup on because I ran in a fun run today, and I had a Ronald McDonald outfit, which I almost wore here, but I had time to go home and change. So be glad. We're not a glum lot. Thank God. So you know what? I really have no agenda of anything that I'm going to say, except for offering up my experience, strength, and hope when it comes to Step 11. And to do that, I kind of have to go backwards and give you a little bit of my story. So I drank a lot, and drinking started for me kind of at a young age. I was 13, and I never ever drank normally. It's not like I drank every weekend in those days, but I certainly never stopped. I was the girl who couldn't stop drinking. I was the one that had to be babysat. I was the one that had to be chaperoned, because once I started drinking, I was either the girl that was going to barf, pass out, or, like, wander away. And that was the pattern but back then it was fun. I'm a chaser of fun. And so back then I was always the fun girl. I don't know why they thought that was fun, but, you know, I that's how I drank. And that's how I thought everybody drank. And but then everybody went on to college, all my friends. I'm from the Bay Area, and all my friends went on to college, and I didn't. I stayed behind. And that pattern of partying continued on in a way, like, all my friends grew up, and they went through life experiences and, you know, matured, and I didn't, because I drank. Whenever I had an opportunity to drink, I took it. And so, you know, the patterns that established in an early time in my life was that I never knew how to process anything. I never knew how to have fun. I never knew how to mourn. The worst was being bored. I never knew how to be bored. And that applies specifically to Step 11 for me, but I'll get to it later. Like, being alone with myself drove me crazy. And so that was when I would really drink a lot and check out, because I didn't have anything else to do, and I thought it was funny, you know, let me just get drunk. And, you know, I would make jokes about cleaning out the liquor cabinet, you know, like it was spring cleaning time. And then I'd be checked out, you know, I'd be passed out on the couch or somewhere at home. And that was the pattern that started for me. And what happened, you know, I can go through all the drunkalog. I mean, I have it all. I was the girl that, I was functional. I was a functional alcoholic. So I held down a job, and, you know, I have an ego. That is a huge character defect of mine that I hope is under control now, because I have a connection with my higher power. But back then, holding down a job for me meant that I could drink. You know, I can drink like a lunatic because I brought home a paycheck. And I was working like a lunatic. I was working like 80 hours a week. And you know, I look back on it now, and I think that was my way of drinking. You know, that entitled me. You know, I was miserable. And so checking out every single night. And at the end of my drinking, I was blacked out every single night for probably 3 years of my life. I lost 3 years of my life to this disease. And I thought that I was all okay, because I held down a job, I took care of my responsibilities, and I was good. But in my first go-around of sobriety was in August of 2005, and I got to the point where I was just really sick of the consequences. To be honest, as I look back on it now, I never wanted to stop drinking. You know, I didn't go and get help because I wanted to stop drinking. I went and got help because I wanted somebody to teach me how to drink like those other people that can go to a bar and have one drink and go home. That's what I chased for years of my life. I wanted to be able to drink like a lady and not suffer the consequences of everybody, you know, the next day. The next day was always the worst. I would wake up, I would not know what I did the night before. I would not know who I called the night before. And I got the looks of everybody, you know. And I knew I did something, but I had no idea what it was. So let's just not talk about it and pretend it didn't happen. And that was the pattern for me. So when I started getting help in 2005, the person that I was then was extremely hateful. I never lost my contact with God, but I was pissed off at God. I knew that I had a God in my life. I always was raised with God in my life, and I knew that there was a God. There was never an atheistic view in my world in Luann Land. But God turned his back on me. You know, I knew that God could have me drink like one of those people that could walk away, you know, have a couple drinks at a bar and have a good time and walk away and not, you know, be stumbling out of the bar or peeing your pants or barfing in the car, you know, all the things that I suffered when I was in my disease. I knew that God could take care of that for me, but he wasn't. And I was mad. I remember my prayer life at that time in my life consisted of a lot of middle fingers to God, lots. I remember saying it. I remember telling him to just F off, get out of my life, you know, you're not helping me. And I realize now that what I was asking God to help me with was to help me drink. I wanted to learn how to drink, and I never prayed right. And therefore, God let me stay in my disease for a little bit longer, and I went to a rehab. And I did everything they told me to do because, you know, that's I'm a Virgo and you do the checklist, and I got it all taken care of. I peed in the cups. I went to all their, you know, my ego didn't want to go to AA. So I went to a rehab thing and then was shocked when they told me that I was going to have to go to 4 AA meetings a week. I was like, no. That's what I'm paying you to do. But, yeah, that's the person I was. So, yeah, then I, because, you know, my ego told me as soon as I went to an AA meeting, everybody there would know me. Oh, my gosh. It's just not me anymore. It's so not me. But that's where I was then. I was going to get control of my drinking and be okay. But what I really want to impress upon you is that I was what I am now, and I will get emotional. Back then, I was, I compare the insides of me to, like, rotten Swiss cheese. It was holes, and it was black, and I hated everybody, and I hated how I compared to everybody, because that's what I did, you know. That was what Luann Land, I never had confrontations with anybody. I, in my head, was the judge and the jury, and I had trials, and I put people up on the stand, and I would, you know, in my head, question them, get them all tried and sentenced, and either kick them out and never have anything to do with them again, or work it out with them ever having any conversations with me about it at all. And that was where I was at the end. I was internally, I was gone. I had no idea who I was. I didn't like who was presenting herself as me, because I hated everybody. I hated life. I walked through life angry at my children. They were bringing me down. I couldn't drink the way I wanted to because I had these kids that needed me. I was angry at my job that provided a check that I, you know, used as a reason to drink. I was angry at my husband for not being able to help me. I hated everybody, and I begrudgingly went through these steps, because when I went back out again, I went to a wedding at 6 months of sobriety. I went to a wedding, and they gave you a choice. And choice for me in sobriety is a huge deal, because we have choices now. And the choice they gave me was that I could either have this much of apple cider, you know, in a little flute, or I can have this much of the champagne in a little flute. And my disease whispered to me that I had 6 months of sobriety and I got it all controlled, you know, go ahead and have that 1 inch of champagne. And I kid you not, I was at a wedding where I didn't know very many people with my kids in a state outside of California. And as soon as I took that 1 inch, I could feel it right now, there's champagne. The demon inside of me that is my alcoholism, he got the megaphone. And I left that, I couldn't think, I couldn't have fun, I couldn't hear the toasts going around, I couldn't hear the joy, I couldn't be a part of anything going on at that reception. So I left the reception and charged 2 bottles of wine to the bride's room, proceeded to drink it, and then I left my kids with people I don't even know at the wedding, and proceeded to drink two bottles of wine that night, and that started about a six-week bender where I don't remember anything, because I knew enough that this wasn't going to last. I was either going to have to start the sobriety thing again, or I was going to die. That's how I drank, and so I was going to get in all that I could in those 6 weeks, and when I got to my second round of sobriety, I had that the gift of desperation. I was desperate and I was scared to death because I could not believe how that disease, it took me over. I was possessed by my disease. But that was a good place for me to be because I had to empty myself of me, what I thought I was then, in order to work these steps with rigorous honesty. You know, I did the steps. I want to fast forward to step 11 because I started working with a sponsor who worked a very firm program, and I wanted her because she intimidated me a little bit, and I knew that at that point I was so scared that I didn't need wishy-washy. I didn't need, you know, someone to let me manipulate because I'm a good manipulator. I needed somebody who I respected enough to be a little frightened of. And I chose my sponsor, and thank God she was available to take me on, because right at that time my entire life started to change, and I didn't know how to handle it. My father went into a convalescent home, and I tried to control everything, you know, but she told me to remain small, and that's something totally new to me, because when you create this land of delusion that you're the queen of, and, you know, you make all the decisions and everybody is wrong when they disagree with you, your ego's pretty big, and I had a really hard time being small. But at that time, I was still pissed off at God, and I didn't really want to do the whole God thing. So the AA group definitely was my higher power when I first started here because I didn't want to have anything to do with the God that let me down. But, you know, these steps are so magical, and they're put in this order for a reason because I gave my will and my power over to the AA group, and I took suggestions because at that time that's all I was able to do. And I went through all the house cleaning, and I did everything my sponsor told me to do. At that point, I was like, that gift of desperation meant that I would do anything that she asked me to do. I say in a joking way that I would have walked across the Golden Gate Bridge naked if she told me that it would have had something to do with my sobriety. And I probably would have. That's not too far from the truth. So when we got to step 11, though, you know, we worked all through the steps, and by that time, I had a glimpse of this. The obsession to drink was lifted, thank God, and I had a glimpse of the promises, the peace that's offered in this program, and I was willing. I was willing to start opening up my mind to God as I understood Him, and start looking at that as opposed to the AA group. And keep in mind, I didn't start step 11 until I was 2.5 years sober. So I took the steps nice and slow, and that's what I needed to do. And I think that as I guide other people through the steps, I allow God to work on the pace. I don't dictate the pace because some people, one of the sponsees that I have who's in this room, and I love her very much, she blazed through these steps. But you know what? You could see God working in her, and that was God's will. To have her, she's got some sort of purpose that needed her to get through these steps quickly, and me, I took 2.5 years. And so at 2.5 years, I was at step 11, and all I can relate to as far as guiding somebody through step 11 is how I was guided through it. And my sponsor, bless her heart, I remember this very clearly. It was in November of 2008, and she started me here, and I read step 11 in the 12x12. And, you know, just like I think Jill was talking about as far as sitting on a beach and all that stuff, I was like, uh-huh, right? I got prayer down. I mean, it was very clear that prayer was a petition to God, and I was really good about giving all these lists of things to God that I wanted, you know? Like, I was really good at the laundry listing to God. And the part about step 11 that really rang true for me as far as prayer goes is that I no longer... I was no longer to pray for myself. And that was a total shift for me. I'm like, well, what do I pray for? Oh, wait, other people. Imagine that. And that was the whole beginning of me being really small. She had me work really hard on humility prior to doing step 11, and I think that I had enough to know that I did not know what was best for me, and to take her suggestions. And so the first thing that I started working on was the St. Francis prayer. And for me, I know that this is a very personal step, but it has so transformed my life, and I'll get to a little bit more of that in a minute. But the St. Francis prayer, when I meditated on it, I was to take it really slow and read each petition as a meditation. Instead of just reading it, like, you know, rote prayers for me don't really work because it's just I can memorize things, but my head at all times is concocting a thousand different things going on. I'm laundry listing all the things that I have to do, and I'm thinking about, you know, the responsibilities that I have going on, and I'm not at all paying attention. I find myself doing that now with the Serenity Prayer even. You know, you get something memorized, and you're not paying attention to what's going on. But when I quiet myself, when I started to quiet myself and work on the St. Francis Prayer, my life started to change. Because when you pray to God, you know, I have now a God that works in my life. He didn't work before, but that's because I wasn't praying correctly. I was not initiating a relationship with my higher power in a way that allowed him to work in my life. You know, I was initiating a relationship with my higher power on a list of what I wanted in my life and what I thought everybody else should have in their life. And I got real humble with the fact that I wasn't to be praying for myself at all, but to be praying for what God's will is. And one of the very first things that my sponsor had me do back at step 3 was to take a week and really get real with what it felt like to be in my will and what it felt like to be in God's will. And I know that that sounds really simple, but it has been something that has changed my entire sobriety, because what I learned from that, it was that when I'm spinning out and when my head is going a thousand different directions and I am not present with the current situation that's going on, I am not in my will. And when I know that, when I can determine that, then I can turn that will over and I can work the steps with humility. But if I don't first know when I'm in my will, then I don't have any direction. But when I'm in God's will, things are peaceful and things are calm and happy, and intuition is there. And so when I quiet myself and sit with God, she had me do that for the first week. Actually, it was 2 weeks, because the way she took me through this step was to practice something for 2 weeks, because that's, I guess, scientists or someone with authority says that 2 weeks establishes a pattern in your life. It's the way to get a habit started. So for 2 weeks, I was to do the prayer as it is in the big book, you know, where in the morning I wake up and I ask God to direct my will on how I can be helpful to another alcoholic and to other people around me, because we do practice these principles in all our affairs. So that's what I did every morning, and in the evening I retire and I think I get real with my gratitude on what I'm thankful for in my life. And so for 2 weeks that is what I did. And I started getting a broader perspective of what my God was. And it was the program and its suggestions to find a power that works for me was huge, because what was introduced to me my entire life was not working for me. And when I started to melt away all the stereotypes that I had in my head of what God was in my life, I was able to expand him to something that is so much bigger than I ever had before. And prayer started that. But really, my biggest impact with step 11, it has to do with meditation. I don't know how many people know, but I have a bit of a reputation for being a new agey chick, and that's okay. That's okay, because that's where I'm at. And I'll take that, because what God has done for me in my life, if people want to put that in a box as being new age, I'm okay with that. But it says in the 12 by 12, because there's a lot of stigma about meditation, especially I don't know, in the religious organizations. Meditation is practiced in every religion. And in our steps, we have 11 steps. So there's 11 suggestions in order to get from that place of desperation to the promises. And as part of step 11, there is meditation. And it's different from prayer. For me, meditation or prayer is asking, you know, asking God for guidance and to direct your day. But meditation is that part where you listen. And I'm not a good listener. I, you know, when I came to this program, I wasn't a good listener because I was doing it all in my head, and I didn't need your input because it was all happening in here, and your input just messed it all up because, you know, the reality of it didn't matter in Luann land. And so I started to get quiet, and I'm just telling you right now, I hated it. My sponsor had me start with a minute. You know, she had me start with 5 minutes of just sitting and being quiet. And first let me just read, because it says in the 12 by 12, there's a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Self-examination, step 10, meditation and prayer, step 11. Taken separately, these practices bring much relief and benefit. But when they're logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. And that's not taking one, you know, it's not, I don't get to cherry pick this program because when I do, that's putting my will into it, and I don't have anything to do with the obsession being lifted from me. That was my higher power. And when I start putting Luann into these steps and my interpretations of me into these steps, I mess it up. So, you know, meditation is a huge part of this program. And you could do it any way you want to do it, you know, it's just getting quiet. But the impact that it's had on my life has, I chased this peace like I did the drink. You know, I chased that party. I chased the fun that drinking used to be for me before it became a nightmare. And now, with what has happened to me through these steps, I chase that peace. I chase my emotional sobriety because without it, I'm only a few steps away from drinking again. So, I started with the St. Francis prayer and meditating on that, in sitting with, you know, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. Where there is hatred, I may bring love. And just sitting there and allowing God in my life with that prayer as being a channel for love and peace. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. Where there is sadness, I may bring joy. And this was an important part of the prayer for me. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, because I wanted everybody to understand me, and that's impossible. To love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, and it is dying that one awakens to eternal life. So I sat with that, as it suggested in step 11, and she said to do that for 5 minutes. I would start by praying that, and I would try to sit for 5 minutes. And just as all the other suggestions that my sponsor has given me through the 6 years of sobriety that I have had, what I resist the most has had the most impact on my life. And now, thank goodness I'm open to suggestions and learning and actually incorporating those lessons into my life, because now when something rubs me the wrong way, when a suggestion happens, when somebody says something in a meeting that rubs me the wrong way, I instantly know that I need to listen, that that's something that I need to either put into my life or just hear and allow. And that wasn't me before. You know, before I didn't allow anybody's opinions into my life. And so meditation for me, it started in November of 2000, actually going back into October of 2008, and she told me to sit for 5 minutes, and I could not turn my head off. My head goes a mile a minute. I have things to do. I'm a very busy person, and I got lists, and, you know, so I would start in on the Lord's Prayer, and I'm like, okay, let me be a channel of thy peace, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to go wash the car today, and did I pay that bill? I can't remember if I paid that bill, and my head doesn't shut up on a normal basis, and it never did, and that's why drinking was so important to me, because it would go, so I would be in the future, and I would be trying to solve all these problems that didn't ever exist in my life yet, because I was, you know, years ahead of myself, or I would be in my thoughts lamenting the past, regretting the drink, regretting all the stuff that I did in my life. I would never be right here, and so it was very difficult for me to do this step, and so for 2 weeks I tried that for 5 minutes, and I've learned to be very honest with my sponsor. I'm rigorously honest with her. I said, no, it didn't work. 5 minutes, I can maybe do 30 seconds of turning my head off. And so she told me to go to the store and get a timer and sit with the timer and try for 1 minute at a time. And I did. I went to the store and I got a timer and I set it there. And after a minute, my head was still going crazy. I couldn't turn it off at all. And so then she had me, I remember, for another 2 weeks, she had me say, just allow your thoughts to come in and go out. you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, you're so hokey. Okay, I'll allow the thoughts to come in and then go out. But the thoughts would come in and they would just get stuck there, you know. And so I tried that for 2 weeks and I came back and I said, no, it didn't work for me either. And then in February, February 9th to be exact, that was when I met with her. I meet with my sponsor on Sundays. She told me, I told her, I just can't do this. I just can't do this. Let's just move on to step 12. I'll continue to work it, I promise. You know, but it had been 3 months and I didn't want to get stuck there forever because I hated it. So she told me, Luann, you need to get a mantra. And I was like, a mantra? What are you talking about? I mean, do you go to a store and get a mantra? Do you go online and look for a mantra? I didn't even know what a mantra was, and I thought this was way too out there for me. But I do what my sponsor tells me to do, and at least I take her suggestion. And so I said, okay, I'll find the mantra. And this is where God took over this step in my life. Because I'm not kidding you, the Saturday after, it was on February 14th, I was talking to somebody completely unrelated to anywhere. It was actually somebody in Las Vegas, and it wasn't related to anybody in this local program. Nobody who knew anything about where I was in my step work or anything. He stops and he says, you're going to think this is really, really weird. And I'm like, what? He's like, I'm supposed to give you a mantra. And when that kind of stuff happens, you can either laugh at it, but who says that? Like, who says? First of all, when she told me to get a mantra, I was like, okay, right. But who, I mean, to me, that shook me up. It was enough of a shock to where I was like, holy cow, I need to do this meditation stuff. So he did. He gave me a mantra. And I went home and I took this, like, I took it seriously. That for me was a God shot. Well, obviously, God was totally working and orchestrating in my life. And so I did. I started really meditating. I started really putting away my idea of what meditation was and working it in my life. And ever since I have, it's been 3 years. I'll be honest. It's been 3 years since I've really put the practice of meditation into my daily life. Not prayer. Prayer has been in my daily life. I'm good with prayer. I pray every day. But really putting meditation, really quieting myself for 15 minutes every day. When I started to do that, the connection that I had with this higher power blew up in a way that I have always wanted in my life. I always wanted the connection with God. I was so mad at God for me wanting to have this connection and me wanting the healing that I saw so many religious people who had. And I was being denied that. And when I started doing meditation, it was like a connection that I've never had before. And that's what step 11 is, to improve our conscious contact with our higher power as we understand and praying only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. Without meditation in my life, I would still be spinning. And it became such a huge and beautiful thing for me to actually get glimpses of where my mind would be quiet. And I'm not saying it was easy. It's been 3 years, just like anything. Working something into your life, learning something that's new, it's like exercise, you know, you have to work it and you have to do it. And so for those 2 weeks I worked with that mantra and then it shifted. There was a complete shift in how I worked step 11. And then the next step, you know, I have become so willing to do whatever God wants to do in my life because of step 11, because of working the St. Francis prayer and sitting back and letting God and being a channel for that power. It was put on my heart to start a meditation meeting in the valley, and I was like, okay. And I fought that for about a year. I was like, oh, I gotta find a space, and I don't know, it's kind of hokey, and nobody around here is ever gonna do it. And it just kept coming back. And I asked Bill for some information, and he gave me some great tools. And finally, it was just like, okay, I'll open up my house, and we'll have a meditation. And if you know two people want to come and sit with me in quiet, we'll have a meditation, and we'll have a meeting afterwards. That was a year and a half ago, and now we have about 15 people on a regular basis that come to my house on Monday and bless me with their energy. And yes, it is their energy, and I feel it, and it's the blessing of step 11 in my life is that my conscious connection with my higher power is so tangible. It's not lip service anymore. You know, I'm not praying to something that I don't understand anymore. I understand my God because my God works in me all the time. You know, I get answers to questions like that, the part of the promises where, you know, like I know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. And I can't explain it to you. I can't explain why I know. I just know what God is doing in my life because every day I pray and every day for 15 minutes, if not longer, I sit and I listen. And after 3 years having this, well, having the meditation meeting at my house is rather convenient for me when I'm working with sponsees, because I kind of make that part of their, I kind of make that part of their step work, that they have to come to my meditation meeting and try it. At least you can't get it if you do it once a week, but it certainly takes the stigma. And by the way, if anyone is alcoholic, it is a closed meeting, but you're welcome to come to my house and meditate with me on Mondays at 7 o'clock. See me after. But it takes that weirdness. I had that. I had that idea that meditation is this hokey new age stuff that people, you know, burn incense and chant and all of those things that I wasn't open to at all. But because this program has taught me to open up my mind and understand something that I did, you know, I didn't understand before, I am open to suggestions. And now the practice of meditation in my sobriety has given me a mind, and I'm not kidding you, this is huge for me. I think that if you guys all have a chattering mind, I think we all do, but, you know, just try to sit still for an hour. I mean, not an hour, don't do that, for a minute. Try to sit still for a minute and see if you can turn your head off. It's hard. It's awful. But now, 3 years later, after really incorporating meditation into my life, I've returned to the workforce at an office where there's a lot of distracting stuff going on and a lot of gossip, and I sit there, I just noticed it within the last month or so, where I say, shut up, you know, in my head. I just like, shut up. And it does. My head stops. It stops that process of comparing myself to everybody and getting involved in the drama and, you know, just all the things that don't keep me as a helpful vessel of God's peace. That's a wonderful thing for me, because I was never able to have that sort of calm and peace in my life, and to be able to have even a couple minutes where my brain just doesn't go there anymore is control that I never thought I would be able to have, and that's something that God is doing for me that I could not do for myself. So when I guide somebody through step 11, it is with a huge heart and a huge affection for this step, because of the impact that it has had. And if anybody, you know, if anybody can get a little bit of the peace now, because the other result of that is not, I mean, emotional sobriety, we have to stay emotionally sober, because staying in a fit condition, our sobriety is contingent on that. And if we don't find tools that work, then you're just faking it, you know, and I've done that. Faking it until you make it is good, you know. Sometimes that's what you have to do. That's what I did with meditation. That's the path that I had to get to where it finally worked, but it did work. I did fake it until it did click in my life, and I have this resource that I can go to when life is spinning out. When I first started, I'll just really quickly explain what happened in my life that meditation was so beneficial for me, because when I hit 3 years of sobriety, I really finally understood what to thine own self be true meant, and it meant a disintegration of my life, because drinking brought me to a place in my life that I didn't want to be, that I wasn't supposed to be in, and looking at that, looking at the magnitude of my life and everything of it falling apart, I swear to you that I would have drank if I didn't have this practice of being small and trying to turn off my head and not worry about all of these pieces that had to come apart. I would have never stayed sober. And so this step is so important to me, because, you know, I can stand now and I can be helpful with it. I can take this practice that has been so beneficial in my life. I was able to go through my father's death in a way that... Because I feel like it's given me a connection to all of us. Because, you know, there's one higher power, and we can all, you know, call it what it is, and that's what works for us, and that's perfect. But he's all of our higher power, and it connects me to all of you. And so when I lost my dad, it wasn't so scary anymore, because I had this higher power that I knew worked in my life before it didn't, and I would have been drinking. You know, and I feel his presence with me every time I close my eyes and ask for it, and that's huge. So I went through a divorce, and it ended up being very amicable, because I was able to not create drama and not be self-serving, even in that, and not seek my will, even in that. And I attribute that all to getting out of my own way, and meditation gets me out of my own way. So when it comes to helping other people through meditation, I am very real and I am very raw with all that it has done for me, because, you know, a divorce, losing my house, switching jobs completely, stepping out of what I thought, you know, I was a manager and I had to step down from management because I couldn't handle it all anymore. So that whole ego deflation of giving up management, which I'll never do again. Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? An alcoholic of my nature should not manage. But, control freak. Losing my grandmother, losing my father, all of these things happened when I was sober. And, you have to use all the tools that are available in this program in order to get all the benefits this program can give you. And don't discount meditation. You know, it's something I didn't want to do initially, and I'm so grateful that I had a sponsor who wasn't going to just let me go on to step 12. Because it was with that one last thing, that one last Hail Mary thing, the mantra thing that she gave me, that it finally worked for me. And with it, I just started running with it. And I want to share it with whoever is open to seeking that peace in sobriety, because it's possible. Life does happen. But you can handle it peacefully and happy. You know, you could be happy as stuff happens, because you can trust in a higher power. Because I don't need to work it all out. And I wouldn't have had that without prayer and meditation. So I try to be very real with the girls that I work with, and telling them the impact that it has had in my life, where I was before. That's what we do. We share experience, strength, and hope. And when it comes to step 11, it's a huge thing for me, and I am always open and available for anybody who wants to talk about it or who wants to be honest about it, because I did think it was stupid. I thought it was hokey, and I don't anymore. It works, and so I'm very open and very honest, and whatever stereotype people have of me because of that, I welcome it, because it's not me, it's God working in my life, and I am humble enough to allow that now. I am absolutely, be careful what you pray for, I'm absolutely a channel. I allow God to just work in my life, and sometimes that means stepping out into very uncomfortable things, like announcing at a meeting that there's a meditation meeting at my house and having everybody roll their eyes. It's fine, because I see what happens. Those 14 souls that come into my house leave better. They leave happy, and we're able to share something that that isn't done very often here. So thank you very much, Bill, for letting me talk.
Thank you, Luann. We had a panelist scheduled to be here today, and unavoidably that person was not able to make it. So I'm kind of torn between two ideas. One is that I have a few comments I'd like to share from my own experience, and I also want to be sure to leave enough time that we can adequately answer all our questions. So if you bear with me, I'd like to share a couple thoughts that I have on the 11th step. I'm going to tell you that I'm an addict. My name is Bill Hatzman. When I say I'm an addict, what I mean by that is that that I've used alcohol and other chemicals to change the way I feel, try to feel like I think everybody else feels. And what I found is that when I begin to put something into my body that changes the way I feel, I end up invariably behaving in ways that are contrary to my value system. And I hurt myself and I hurt other people. And I wake up the next day and I'm ashamed and I'm scared. And I don't want to ever do those things again. And I don't see the role that alcohol or other chemicals have played in me doing those things. And I live in this fantasy world where I don't see the truth about my condition. And the problem for me is that in that set of circumstances, I'm doomed to repeat that behavior. And I repeat it and I repeat it and I repeat it. And I get to a place where life is so painful that I just want to die. And I can't seem to die on my own, and I don't seem to have the courage to take my own life. And I don't know if any of you are living there today or if any of you have visited there before, but if you have or you are, I suspect you know the desperation with which I got here. We've been sitting a long time. I hope to keep my comments brief, but we're going to do questions after this. So I'm going to invite you all just briefly to stand up if you like, kind of stretch a little bit. just to give you a chance to do that. It's not a break, so don't take off. I'm going to keep talking while you're stretching. But the comments that I wanted to make are that in my experience, prayer for me started well before even the first step. And maybe some of you have had this same prayer. Oh, God, help me! That's a prayer I've found a lot of us have made in common. And so I have found that in my own experience, and I've heard other people tell me the same thing, that prayer oftentimes begins well before we even come to the realization that the recovery is something we want or need. As I've gone through the steps, and as I work with other men going through the steps, I suggest that the guys I work with continue to ask God for help. Now, I don't know how you guys got to this place, but I didn't get here singing too loud in the choir. I didn't get here with a fond affection for a higher power. What I got here with was a great deal of doubt, a great deal of resentment, a great deal of hurt. And if there was a God that existed, I couldn't see what he'd possibly want with me except to hurt me. And I couldn't see any reason that I should pay homage to or wish to do anything for any higher power that allowed me to live in the conditions that I lived in. And so this idea of asking God for anything was not something I welcomed. But I did it anyway. And I urge the men that I work with to do it anyway. I wasn't required, and I don't require the men that I work with to know who they're talking to when they ask for this help. But I advise them to ask for help. I advise them to ask for help that they not drink. And that seems to be imperative around the first three steps, at least. You know, just whatever that power is, whatever name you want to give it, some of us find comfort in asking for power from a tree or a hill or a group of people. I'm not concerned with the practice as it relates to that. As long as you're asking for some help outside of yourself, to be the guy or gal sitting next to you. So we ask for help not to drink against our will or use. In steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, and 10, I encourage the men to ask God for help to see the truth. Because seeing the truth is imperative in those steps, I've found. And also in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, so 4 through 10, I find it to be very valuable to ask God for help to face my fears. Because I'm going to confront some fears in those steps. Through this process of going through the steps, I find that incrementally, that means a little bit at a time, my prayers start to evolve. They start to mature. They change from, oh God, help me, to, all right, God, what's your will? You know. I loved what our other panelists talked about today about quieting the mind and prayer and meditation, and I love that. You know, prayer, I've heard people tell me, was kind of talking or petitioning or saying something to God or a higher power, and meditation is trying to listen for whatever it is that's coming back. And for me, one of the first prayers that I remember was back when I was praying in my thoughts. I don't know if you guys have done this, and maybe some of you still do it well today. I don't know. But for me, praying in my thoughts, I'll never forget this. It was a Sunday morning. I was laying in bed. I was tired. I did not want to get up. But I had this nagging thought that would not leave me alone. And the thought was, you get down on your knees and pray. And I said, I ain't doing it. I am not doing it. But I couldn't shake this thought. I couldn't get rid of it. And so, out of desperation, I said, okay, fine. I'm doing the prayer, and then I'm going back to sleep. And I got down on my knees at the edge of my bed, which I'm not real big on ceremony. I do find sometimes it helps establish a state of humility for me to get on my knees, but I don't find that to be necessary. God listens to me no matter what position I'm in. But I got down on my knees that day, and I started to pray. Now, again, I'm doing this in my thoughts. If you could have heard my thoughts, this is just about exactly what you would have heard. Heavenly Father, thank you for this day sober. I pray that you would show me your will for me. And, you know, my grandmother had a will. I was supposed to get my grandfather's gold watch when my grandmother died. You know, my dad, that son of a bitch, I bet you he has it. And then I start thinking about the things, the violent things that happened between me and my father when I was a child. And I start MFing this guy. And I'm getting pissed. And about that time, my eyes open and I see a picture on the nightstand. I lived alone, so I can't blame anybody else for putting it there. It's a picture of me from like the first grade. And I see that picture of me and I say, yeah, how could he do those things to that cute little kid? I was cute when I was a kid. And I just got rageful. How could he do those things to that kid? And then this other thought entered my mind. And I don't know where the thought came from today, but the thought that came to my mind was, what have you been doing to that kid? And it shifted my perception just a little that day. And my experience with prayer and meditation has been much like that. My perception of myself and of you and of God have changed in some very profoundly positive ways as a result of doing this practice. And I wish somebody would have said to me, I say this, okay? Listen to me now. I wish somebody would have done that to me. Now, the reality is, there were probably people saying that to me, and I couldn't hear it. And even if there weren't, and someone had, I wouldn't have listened. So I know that what I'm saying today is not necessarily going to change you. But I do feel that it's possible, because I don't know how God works, man. But I know that I have gotten hope from other people talking about being in places of desperation where I've been, and they've talked about the amazingly positive things that have changed in their life. Luann just talked about going through some very, very difficult things and not having to drink. And you know what? If you don't have the same drinking problem that we share, that won't make a lot of sense to you. But if you've got the condition, if you've got the allergy to alcohol and the mind that keeps telling you that, oh, just a little bit this time will be okay, then maybe, just maybe, you know what kind of a miracle we're talking about. So my prayers have continued to evolve and mature since that time. I pray out loud today. And I loved what Jill said. She said she prays with her fiancé. You know, that may sound hokey, and you don't have to take my word for it, but God, I hope that you will. Find somebody that you love and pray with them. You will be amazed at what happens. Now, I'm a guy, and I have very typical ego things. Maybe that's human, actually. But I'll tell you, as a result of walking through the fear, see, because I'm scared to death that if I start praying in front of my wife, she's going to think I'm stupid, right? That, I'm just being honest. That's the way I think. I'm going to say something stupid. I'm going to pray wrong, whatever. And I talk myself off that ledge, and I get down, and I lead my wife in prayer. And several weeks after starting that, I hear her say, my husband is the spiritual leader of our family. How is that me? How is that possibly me? So I pray with my wife, and prayer and meditation, again, praying being sort of petitioning God, and meditation being listening. I want to give you some very practical examples of how this works for me. In step 6, we ask God to reveal to us our character defects. And the funny thing is for crying out loud, we should know what they are. And for some insane reason, I don't see them. And so I pray for God to show them to me, to disclose to me the truth about my conditions and how I can change. And you know what I do then is I go, well, that's all well. I got this. As Jill said, I'm going to work on my character defects. Let me tell you how this works for me. I pray in the morning. Every morning, I say, and I'm going to share my prayer with you. I say, God, I pray that you would give me the courage to walk with you today. I guess that you would please guide my thoughts. Please help keep me free of selfishness, self-pity, and dishonesty. I pray that you would help me to embrace your will for me and help me to carry that out today. And then I follow that with some very specific prayers that I do for some people in my life, and they're kind of personal, so I won't go into some of those. But I will tell you that one of the personal things that I pray about is I ask God to show me how to love my wife and to make her feel treasured. And one morning, just as I was finishing that little prayer, it occurs to me that the night before my wife was a little unsettled. She was feeling a little bit ignored because I had stayed at a meeting later than I normally do the night before. And so I didn't give her as much time as I normally do. And so she was feeling a little bit neglected. And the thought occurred to me, hey, jackass, you're asking God to show you how to love your wife. Why don't you get off your ass right now and go in there and hug her? Now, here's step 7 in action. I got up and did it. Now, I don't tell you that to make you think I'm swell, because if I was swell, I wouldn't have left her neglected the night before, okay? But because of the things that I've learned in this process, I'm able to live a more happy and contented life than otherwise I would on my own power. I talked about prayer being a critical element of all the steps, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I didn't say 12, but that comes next month. And so by the time we get through step 11, why is step 11, or through step 10, why is step 11 even relevant? I mean, if you've been praying to that point, why is it relevant? And the only answer I can come up with that is that without step 11, I think I've arrived. Step 11 reminds me that that if I want to stay happy and content and have a purposeful life, I need to continue to improve, because I'm always going to fall short. I do a prayer in the evening with my wife, and I happen to agree with everything everyone said about how prayer is a very personal thing. I'm gonna share my prayer with you, not because I hope that you'll embrace it necessarily, but rather because before I had this experience, I didn't know how to pray, and I learned how to pray by going to people who knew how to pray, and they told me how they prayed, and then I developed my own way. So I'm going to tell you how I pray. If this is useful, wonderful. If not, you can disregard it. Heavenly Father, thank you for another clean and sober day here on earth. I pray, Lord, that you would... I thank you for all of your blessings, and I pray that you would show me... Help me to see all your blessings, share them, and to be a good steward with them all. Lord, I ask you to forgive me of the sins that I've committed today, and I ask that you would please help me to become the man that you'd have me be. I ask that you help me to live in the truth. Please show me your will for me and give me the willingness and the strength to carry it out. I ask, Lord, that you would help me to build your kingdom here on earth. I pray that all your children would come to know you, that they would find the joy and peace and love and freedom that I've found in you. Lord, I pray that you would use me to help meet the needs of your kids. I pray for healing and for those who are suffering. Lord, I pray that they would find comfort in you. Amen. So that's the prayer I do most every night. I love what Luann said, too, about prayers becoming rote. And sometimes I get to where I'm doing that prayer in my mind, and I got to go, cut it out, and we'll shake it up and do something different for a few days. But for me, that prayer, and it's something that evolves, something I've been working on for months, really kind of captures everything that I think I want to be praying about. Our book talks, and actually Jill did a good job of talking about some of the things that the book says on pages 86 and 87 about praying. And I guess there is one thing I might want to elaborate on. It says on page 87 of the big book, it says, If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many books, helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer. Now, is it odd or is it God? Right? Last night, as I was thinking about today and what were we going to do with, you know, only three panelists, for crying out loud, if I don't show up with four panelists, you guys will all see what a fraud I am. And what I'm going to share with you is a Christian resource. I'm not here advocating Christianity to anyone. This happens to be the brand of religion that my wife and I practice, but I'm not here to sell you a Bible or sell you on my faith. That's not the point. The point I want to make here is that for me, things outside of the fellowship have also proven to be very helpful. And last night, in this daily reflection, I read two things, and I want to share them with you. It says, constant prayer means keeping our requests constantly before God as we live for Him day by day, always believing He will answer. When we thus live by faith, we are not to give up. God may delay answering, but His delays always have good reasons, and we must not confuse them with neglect. As we persist in prayer, this is the part, as we persist in prayer, we grow in character, faith, and hope. And one other comment here. It says becoming a Christian, but I would say becoming a person of faith means beginning a whole new relationship with God, not just turning over a new leaf or determining to do right. New believers have a changed purpose, direction, attitude, and behavior. They no longer seek to serve themselves, but to serve God. Can you point to any areas where having God's Word has changed your life or where it should do so? And that's a great point for me to reflect on and to meditate on. God, what am I not seeing today? How can I better serve You? I'll leave you with one last thought and then we'll go to questions. I was at a meeting not that long ago and I was talking a little bit about my prayer life, and I mentioned that I was praying for some people. And there was a point to why I was explaining that, but after I spoke at the meeting, someone later asked, why do we pray for... He asked, why do we pray for other people? But I would say you could ask the same question, why do we pray, right? And I felt like I should know the answer to that question, but I was stumped. I couldn't answer the question. I felt like I was supposed to know the answer, but I didn't know the answer. And so I did what I thought was a pretty reasonable thing. I went to the leaders at the church that I attend, and I said to them, I asked five or six of them, you know, the head preacher man, and then the music guy, and then the administrative preacher guy, and okay? I went to all those guys. They've all been to the College for God and stuff, and I said, why do we pray for other people, or why do we pray? And you know what they said? Wah, 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 wah. They said stuff that I was kind of sitting there going, oh, okay. I can't tell you what they said. I don't remember. It was some highfalutin explanation that, I mean, it makes sense, and I don't mean to diminish their value at all. That's not the point. The point is that I couldn't really put my teeth into what they were talking about. So after I talked to them, I just happened to talk to another guy who's nobody special, right? He's just a guy, another guy that I know at our church. And I asked him, and he said something that changed me, man. I said, why do we pray? And he goes, well, I'm glad you asked. And he said, the reason I pray is because it works. So thank you for letting me share with you. And what we're going to do now is go to questions. All right, thank you all. So I'm going to ask the question here, and then you guys have mics there that should work. And we'll have our distinguished panelists answer the questions. Okay. First question. I have doubts about what I believe, and I'm afraid of being a fraud for God. How can I pray? Would you like to start us off, Casey?
I'm still JC, and I'm still an alcoholic. And, I pray for strength, and I pray to find myself, and I it's this limitless source of strength. And, as just flesh and bones, you get older every year, and you can think of that as getting weaker every year, and you can handle the stress and the problems of life a little bit less and less and less if you're only flesh and bones. But if you're growing along spiritual lines, you're actually getting stronger every day, and you're getting more of you, and you're getting more wisdom, more knowledge, more strength. And as you develop this relationship with God, you can go through life growing instead of getting smaller. It's just flesh and bones. I'm getting weaker. I'm less able. There's less strength. Every time I go through something difficult, I get a little weaker, a little bit less of me. As a person that's trying to grow along spiritual life, trying to enlarge my spiritual life, I'm getting stronger as I go through things. Because as I go through something, I'm trying to find the reason, the purpose for it. And when I find a purpose for it, this purpose serves me. And I get to grow through it, and I find ways that I can help other people through this. So praying for this strength and harmony. Our book talks about that we step on the toes of others and they retaliate. One of my favorite philosophers would be Bruce Lee. And most people think of Bruce Lee as like a karate guy or in Chinese movies or whatever, But he was a philosopher too. And he was a very spiritual guy. But he said, and he talks about be like water, And water never goes against the grain. Water always goes in the flow. And that's what I've learned, I'm praying to go in the flow. I'm praying to move along and not be stepping on people's toes, not creating worse problems going on in life. So, you can't start off at the end when you're praying. You start off at the beginning. So, and you're developing a relationship, So you can't be a fraud you start praying and start trying to develop that relationship with a power greater than yourself, you will not be a fraud. It might feel kind of odd at times. It might feel not natural. But over time, with persistence, and this whole program is about persistence. You have to be committed to not quit, And over time, this relationship will develop, and you will not feel like a fraud. You'll feel infinitely stronger. Thank you.
All I really have to say about that is my experience with God is that either God is everything or God is nothing, and He doesn't want me to put. He knows exactly what's in my heart. He knows exactly that I don't believe all these things that I've been told. So I don't need to sit there and be a fraud for God. I need to be honest with who I am. If there's nothing good that will happen if I put on a mask and tell anybody that, I'm great with God, because I tried that. I tried to put the mask on with my life, and God was fake in my life. What I find really resonates with people, especially in the world in general, but especially in the area of recovery, is honesty. When I'm honest with being mad at God, even as close as I've gotten to Him, being mad at God for a certain situation in my life, that resonates with people because it's like, okay, then you are too, We all go through stuff, and God doesn't, my experience with God is that He doesn't care about being a fraud for God. Just do what you need to do. Be honest with where you're at, and work on being willing. When you're not willing, that's when growth will stop. So I find that just being willing to tell God, I'm not feeling all this, I don't get all the stuff that people are talking about, reveal something to me that works, then you're not being a fraud. Being a fraud for me is not walking authentically with God, and this program is about being true to ourselves.
We've got a lot of questions, a lot of good questions here, and unfortunately we're really short on time, so what we're going to do
we're going to do our best to answer as many of them as we can. And I'm just going to let JC and Luann go ahead and pick up the questions and go from there.
And let me just say, I'm going to try to pick out ones that might be easier. Some of these are huge answers that will take long, you know, answers. So some of these are quicker, and I'm trying to do that. Go ahead, JC.
Okay. This question is, when do I start step 11? There is no spiritual part of this program. This program is a spiritual program. Trying to talk about the spiritual part of this program is like trying to talk about the round part of a basketball. This is a spiritual program. And we're starting step 11 right from the beginning. As soon as we decide we're powerless over alcohol and start trying to say the serenity prayer or whatever we've been talking, we start getting into, you know, soft through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. That's something you can do from day one. Don't let anybody tell you. Don't let anybody deny you a relationship with God from day one. Thank you.
This question has two in here that are kind of within the same lines. So I think the point it says, it seems like AA is a Christian fellowship with all their prayers. I'm not. Any suggestions for me? It's not a Christian fellowship. I mean, of course, it was based on certain beliefs. We all have our own beliefs. But the beauty, as I found it, of AA and any 12-step program is that it is the God of our understanding, truly, completely the God of your understanding. If the God of the Christian faith doesn't work for you, you are totally within your rights. You need to develop a relationship with your higher power that works. I was raised in the Christian faith, and the spiritual awakening that I have had as a result of working in these steps broadened and expanded the God that I was raised with into something just huge. And I wouldn't say that I participate so much in the Christian faith, although I see that as an integral part of everybody's belief systems. This program has given me the ability to see the similarities and not the differences. So I had a real big problem when I first started working the program about doing the Lord's Prayer. I had a really big problem about a lot of things. But just like I shared in my talk, when I walked through those uncomfortable things or the things that rub me wrong, that's when I have the biggest benefit. Like, what do I fear? Like, what do I want my God to be like in my life? And when I am asked questions about everything, God answered me completely and blew open my spiritual life. So, just remember that in all the step work, in everything that is in the book of AA, is we have a God as we understand Him. And that is Islamic God, it's the Jewish God, it's the Christian God, it's the New Age God, it's whoever is working, whatever power is working for you, do not let, I would encourage you, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I would suggest and encourage you to not let anything that seems to be of a certain faith dissuade you from gaining the truth out of those prayers. Because they're religious leaders and they're religious truth in every prayer. And if you find the similarities in that, I promise you, you'll grow as opposed to looking at the differences and keeping yourself where you're at.
Just do one question.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, this is kind of like a continuation of Luann's question. So many of the prayers in AA are Christian. I'm not. Should I insist on prayers for my faith? Faith is very personal. AA recognizes this. AA states it's God as I understand Him. AA is open to atheists, agnostics, and people of any faith. And the forward to the second edition of the Big Book, it explicitly addresses this. That we're a mingling of Buddhists, Islamists, Christians, non-religious people. We do have some set prayers, this is about your connection with God. It's about a personal connection, how you connect with God. You know, and if you do that through your religious beliefs, or that is perfectly fine. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Thank you.
Hi, There's a couple here that address the same thing. I'll read them both. During meditation, do you talk to God? And in meditation, is meditation listening to God's prayers, talking to God? You know, again, I hate to put anything into a bucket of what works for me will also work for you. So for me, meditation is absolutely quieting my mind. That's what it is, and it's not easy to do. So I try my very hardest, and it's gotten a lot easier as I practice it, to not talk in my head, not ask, not talk, not think, not rationalize, not try to work out problems. I have a lot of different methods, but I try in my mind's eye to just put a blank screen up and look at the blank screen and put all the thoughts away. That's what meditation is for me. And like I said, prayer, it's been said, I don't know who said it, and I don't know if they have the authority to say it, but in my experience, prayer is petitioning and asking, doing the talking, and meditation is quieting your head so that you can get those answers.
Yeah. What's that word, petitioning? What does it mean?
It's asking a question. A petition is a request that you have to God.
Okay.
Yeah. You're talking, doing the talking.
How do you guide a sponsee through the 11th step? What assignments, activities did you give to your sponsees? First off, I like to go through the big book with anybody that I sponsor. I take them directly through these pages, line by line. We go over this to see what it means. Then they have to decide what that means for themselves. That's the assignment, to sit down with me and go through that. What I suggest is to do what is suggested there, is to learn to start praying at night, do a quick review, and then wake up in the morning. Upon awakening, you know, personally, I tell them what I do, and I ask them to try what I do, and for at least a week, if they don't like to do it, then do whatever the heck they want to do. But, you know, hit your knees in the morning and say thank you at night. And my favorite prayer is thank you. Thank you.
How important is God in one's life, and does having God or a higher power of one's understanding the straight, the path, the straight to their sobriety and freedom or self? A huge question. You know, I have learned in this program that I don't deviate from what the book says. When I start putting Luann's interpretation in there, I will get off track. So how important is God's life? I mean, God is... How important is God in one's life? This is a spiritual program. You know, it says that our sobriety is contingent upon our spiritual fitness, you know, the daily retreat that we get. So a spiritual connection to God in your life, to me, is the foundation of my sobriety. And then that's why it's so important to me to find a God that works in your life, because I have to daily, sometimes minutely, hourly, surrender my will, because I have learned that my will get me in trouble. And it's not so much me giving up my will. That was a big thing for me. I didn't want to be a doormat. And it says we don't have to. It's aligning our strong alcoholic will. We're all alcoholics. We all have a very strong will. It's aligning that with God's purpose. And that's where the magic happens. But without that, like, I try to think of my sobriety without having a developed connection with my higher power. And it would lack, it wouldn't be as deep, and it wouldn't be as wide, and it wouldn't encompass every part of my life where I have peace. I honestly have peace and serenity every day of my life now, whereas before it was chaos and drama and blackout. So for me, to answer that question, and JC might want to add some more to it, but it's of the highest importance to have a higher power that works in your life for my sobriety.
I'm just going to go to this next question.
Okay.
This question is, what is the meaning of life?
Ooh.
You guys are getting heavy on me.
I'm glad you got that one.
You know, it's certainly not what I thought it was when I got here. You know, when I hit my teenage years, I felt that I needed to feel happy all the time and free, and I thought through drugs and alcohol I felt happy and free, and that seemed like the meaning of life, you know. But all that, it was false. It was all a big lie, and there was nothing real there. It came back and bit me really hard, and I still tried to manipulate me into getting that happiness and freedom and joy that I thought I got early on, but it left me. And when I got here, I was a disaster. And life didn't seem like it was worth living. And it seemed so worthless to me by the time I got here that suicide looked like a really decent option. And, you know, and that's pretty pathetic once you get to that point where life is so worthless that you think suicide would be better than just facing all the trials and tribulations that come down the pipe on a daily basis. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I started finding some meaning for life. You know, and it turned out, you know, joy and freedom and peace, these became real things. You know, these became part of the meaning of life. And I started finding that through developing my full self. We are not complete human beings when we're just mind and body. You know, we are body, mind, and spirit. And once we start developing that spiritual side of ourselves, we find a whole new part of ourselves, and reality totally changes. You know, our book talks about the prosaic steel girder and how nothing in the world looks more real and solid than a piece of steel. But what it's talking about is that with an electronic microscope, you can look into a steel girder and you'll see mostly empty space. It's electrons moving around. What looks real isn't real. You know, and so that's what you start finding out. I thought only what was real was the my mind and my body. In this program, I started to find this spiritual side of myself that I couldn't see. And I learned to believe in what I couldn't see. And that's what faith is believing in what you don't see. And it becomes real. Now, today, I see what I couldn't see everywhere. Thank you.
Just one last point. It says, I think that's all we have time for. I've gone through the steps, but all those promises haven't happened yet. What should I do next? And I just really want to quickly read. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. That's the beginning of the promises. Keep going, because you're not halfway through. You know, I worked my steps. It took me, like I said, almost 3 years to finish my steps. So a year and a half for me would have been halfway through. The promises for me fully happen in my life until the 11th step. But they do. I mean, that's a promise in this book. If you are painstaking about working these, if you're rigorously honest, if you're thorough from the start, these promises, it has been my experience that every single one of them has come true. So what you should do next is just keep going. Just keep the one foot in front of the other. Go to meetings. Don't drink in between. That's my suggestion for that. Thank you.
Please help me to give a good warm round of applause for our panelists today.